to Bagel Tech Big, the weekly show from the Bagel Tech Network that does the whole tech roundup, everything else that's gone on, all the fun stuff, and what a fun week it's been. I've got a great panel with me this evening. Joining me, top left, Mr. James Hart. How you doing, mate?
Good evening, Mr. Rankin. And it's interesting what you define as fun, I guess.
Well, there's been a lot happening this week, which is, I mean, the last couple of weeks, actually, to be fair, when I've been doing the daily show, I've kind of been sitting thinking, oh, I'm starting to the point where I can't get away with every other day now, which I could for a long time from sort of April onwards.
I think what's happened is because this late summer thing's happened, we've completely forgotten that Christmas is not actually that far away and they're starting to ramp up for it. So it's going to get busy.
It is going to get busy. All the fun times. Good week.
Very busy, but fun. Thank you very much. Yeah, yes, I was up in Salford on Monday because they've started broadcasting from there now. Who thought it would be possible?
Well, there you go. And it's all thanks to your help, of course, James.
Well, I was there making sure, overseeing it. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's all down to me.
Next to James, we've got Mr. Ian Grant joining us from a day at the seaside, buddy.
Oh, yes.
Riding donkeys.
I think it's a good week.
See, now this is where we need to educate Eric as to what a British seaside summer's all about. Riding donkeys.
Yes.
It's not a sexual practice.
I didn't ride them. Fish and chips by the sea.
Fish and chips.
Paddle in the sea.
Toffee apples.
Paddle on the beach.
Toffee apples. Candy apples. There we go. Without the translation. Fantastic. And candy floss.
Oh, yes. And cinder toffee, if you know what that is.
Cinder toffee. Is that the brittle stuff?
It's like the middle of a crunchy.
Yeah.
You have some of that. Oh, it's fantastic. And if you have that, people don't know what that is, but down south quite.
So you've come back about 15 stone heavier today then?
Oh, of course. Absolutely.
Good man.
That's what you mean you go to the seaside.
Below him, we've got Mr. Mike Hurley. Long time no see, buddy.
I am back, Ewan. I've finally taken a break from my usual schedule to be with you.
What, looking after the girlfriend and being under the thumb? Is that it?
No, recording. Lots of recording.
Oh, sorry, my mistake. what have you been up to then? Just record. You got a new podcast out, you said.
Yeah, we launched a new show yesterday with Stephen Hackett.
Plug it,
512pixels.net. It's called Ungeniused, which is UNGENIUSED. It's at ungeniused.com. We effectively find random Wikipedia articles and then talk about them.
Oh, right. No preparation, I hope.
Not too much.
Good man. And finally, last but by no means least, Mr. Eric Lanigan from California.
Where it's about 95 degrees outside. How's it going, guys?
Hey, we're not doing so bad ourselves here. I think we only do Celsius over here, so I don't know what the conversion is, but we've hit 30 degrees today.
So for comparison, that would be, I would say we're about one of the hottest days of summer right now. So where does that leave you guys?
Yeah, this
on
is
the Celsius conversion, because I don't know either.
Well, this is the hottest day of summer, but it's actually in autumn.
Right. So, okay, so we're having the same weather right now.
Yeah, it's an Indian summer is the terminology, so, over here.
Gotta love that climate change.
Oh, fantastic.
Allegedly so. The week in technology, we've had a ton of stuff going off, but the big thing that's kicked in is Apple had an announcement that said, we're going to talk to you on the 4th, and there's a huge event happening with that next week, not just the keynote. We're going to be at LMUG, which is the London Mac User Group. I'll be there. Don McAllister will be there. Don's going to be doing Mac Break weekly from there, I think. And also Channel 4 are popping down as well for a bit of a hello. So if you're near the Wood Pub in Marylebone, get your butt down there. Watch the feed live with us. I've got a feed. And if they don't broadcast it. And we'll be able to see the new Let's Talk iPhone thingy. So, and then this week, Amazon stood up and delivered the killer blow on tablets, yes? No?
No.
No. Oh, no. Oh, right. We've got a bit of a split. Eric's nodding. Eric's saying, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You go first. Oh. You guys go first.
Right, go on then. So who wants to start off with the descent, James or Ian?
Come on, James. I'll let you.
Okay, well, it's a BlackBerry playbook to start off with in Amazon's very special version of Android. So it's not real Android. It's kind of like a side swipe at it. Watch those patent lawsuits come in. It's going to be using the Amazon App Store. It's going to be using an Amazon browser. It's going to be basically the Amazon ecosystem on a tablet PC. And if you love Amazon, if what you think is what the Amazon is a benign company that's not intent on world domination in the same way as one might accuse Tesco, then Walmart, one might consider that to be an absolutely fantastic proposition. They will sell millions of them, quite frankly, like they did with the Kindle, especially if they get the price point right, and world domination will be theirs. That, to me, is frightening.
So we've lost Walmart, Asda, and Tesco as a sponsor then. Thanks.
I didn't say they actually are. They might just be really, they might just be like your local spa down the road. I should have said spa, shouldn't I?
I'm going to jump ahead to later in the conversation just to throw in something in support of what James just said about Amazon's world domination. They're clearly going to dominate the media sales and even the online retail sales by giving everyone this tablet by which to access Amazon services. But one of the biggest stories here, I think, is the Amazon Silk browser, which I know we'll get to later. I'm jumping ahead. But I just wanted to say that I think if any other company did this, Google, Microsoft, Apple, Facebook, the public would be all over them. Whereas Amazon is totally allowed, just I guess, I don't know why, to just say, we're going to funnel all of your web traffic, including these secure certificates, through our servers and keep logs of them and keep track of this stuff and use it for aggregate data and so forth to improve the browsing experience for everybody. Completely funneled every bit of your browsing. I mean, people who are upset about the Facebook button following you from site to site, even when you were logged out, that's nothing compared to this.
To be fair, there have been browsers that could have done that in the past. You've got Skyfire and some of these pre-rendered stuff that actually send the output of the screen to your phone rather than the, you know, so you're generating flash actually on their servers. But yes, that they've admitted to it is kind of like a bit shamefaced, really, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's just a window to sell you things from the Amazon store.
But it's more than that. They are watching.
Well, hang on, because I mean, I think, you know,
I think Google are doing that as well.
We'd all be agreed that the selling and the selling. So, I mean, it's you know, the basics of whether they're providing a service which is enhanced and operable and intuitive and serves the customer well, as opposed to something which becomes, I want all your data, I want to know where you are, where you live, and I want all the monopolistic stuff that can go along with that. Those are two different things entirely. And I mean, is there a suggestion that whilst there is the potential for privacy issues associated with Silk, is it actually going to deliver on that? Or is actually what they're using it for a method of ensuring a better purchasing experience?
Here's my sense of why it is, and correct me if I'm wrong, because maybe I just can't think of an example of when Amazon has angered consumers and made them feel like they were being taken advantage of in a way that Google has, Facebook has, Apple has, Microsoft constantly has, never stopped since they came into existence. So consumers are used to that. They're used to feeling like these companies are trying to screw them over and do something wrong to them. Whereas Amazon is just the company everyone's in love with. You know, just like the Zappos CEO goes around evangelizing and writing about customer service is very underrated. And they have such good customer service. That's why they're over the entire internet, they're like the best site for retail, buying and shopping of anything and of any type of thing, from clothing to solid state memory. And the shipping and the prices and the shipping are almost always the best of any other site. And the customer service, return policies are great. Free return shipping for a lot of stuff, very lenient, more so than brick and mortar stores. And you don't pay taxes in a lot of places. And they just seem to always delight customers and to charge less for things than you'd expect. The Kindles were always considered, or at least version 2 and onward, were considered underpriced compared to what the competitors were charging. And the books were sold for a good value. It was the publishers that conspired to raise the price of those Kindle ebooks. Mm. Amazon wanted to sell them for like $5. And they said, well, no, that devalues our product.
So they had every right to do that. They had every right to do that because Amazon is... What's critical to Amazon's success and some of these large other companies' success is the squishing of the supply chain. If they can get their stuff prices down because they are buying in huge, massive bulk and shipped out, that is how they make their money. That is how, and of course, customer, I think, I don't want to downplay Amazon's customer service because it is second to none. In this world where if you have a problem with some company, you end up getting an automated email back or ended up having to go through an IVR system for 45 minutes. We're so used to that kind of poor service that Amazon is streets ahead of practically everybody else. You're absolutely right. But the supply chain, you're going to say everybody's happy with it. But people who supply Amazon, I don't think they really are. And the publishers have done very well to fight back to that.
Exactly, because Amazon is a company that businesses hate, but consumers love. And I think that's the difference. They do what they do is extremely predatory. Businesses, brick and mortar stores, mom and pop bookstores. I mean, everyone in business hates Amazon and for undercutting the prices. I mean, think what Apple must think of them now with a $200 tablet. I mean, and better cloud services, arguably, than Apple's going to have. So it's always been a consumer-facing, consumer-focused company. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think they've ever made a misstep in the way that any of those other companies have that causes consumers to say, whoa now, Amazon, let's reevaluate how you're treating us. I don't think they've ever done that.
I mean, let's think as well quite logically here, because, you talk about Apple, and I think you can use the same analogy, because Apple is a business that companies hate because of patent disputes, because of monopolistic behavior and all that kind of stuff, but customers love. But I think the difference that you're talking about there, Eric, is the fact that journalists hate Apple, but they kind of love them at the same time. Whereas with Amazon, it's just pure love. There is no hate with Amazon within the journalistic fraternity. There's no criticism. There's no negativity. There's no, this is typical Amazon. You can see where Amazon's going with this. They're going to lock you in and then you're all going to be bending over and they're going to be rogering up the backside.
I think that might well be Amazon's really clever PR as much as anything, because you do see these personal stories about a supplier who, I read one, I don't know, you know, how much you believe of it, but there was a musical instrument supplier who went to Amazon, Amazon came to them and said, how much are you going to sell this for? And they said, we'll sell it for this much. And then Amazon said, right, that's the going rate for these things. And they went to a cheaper supplier to get their supplies for less, because then they knew what the going rate was. And so it was that kind of real predatory, it's making sure that they get the best value for the, as you say, for the end user, but it's not doing the businesses any good. But of course, that's not going to get featured in the newspapers, because it's not a consumer rights issue. And the newspapers and the media love to jump to the defense of the consumers rather than the small businesses.
Mike, you've been very quiet here. So
I was just about to chip in there, Ewan. You read my mind. I was going to say, it's not just things like that, James, that they fix. I mean, Amazon are known for fixing all sorts of products. For example, in the Amazon App Store, if you submit an app and you may select to have your, you can suggest to Amazon, oh, I'd like my app to cost $2, but they will make the decision. So if they feel that your app is only worth 99 cents, that's what it will go on sale for.
Mm.
And they have the ability to change the price of your application as much as they choose.
Which would work just fine and dandily if they were still paying you your cost price and then selling it at whatever profit they wanted to make. But they're not. They're dictating the amount that you take at the same time, which is very bad.
Yes.
That's the same as all the supermarkets do.
Yeah.
Not to go back to a too far of an old point, but I did just want to add that what Ewan had previously said, which is that I don't think it's just journalists who hate Apple, but like Amazon. I mean, I know from facing that chat room night after night that, I mean, there it is a religious war of Apple that extends way beyond journalists. There's t-shirts, yes. Right? So I think that it's also, Amazon, as far as I know, has angered just no one anywhere who's not in business competing with them.
Yeah, I think if you look at Apple, I think it's geeks that hate Apple, though. Windows user geeks that hate Apple. I don't think mainstream consumers who walk in shops and go, oh, look at that, darling.
My wife hates Apple.
Well, the difference is there is a perception.
She's your wife, mate. I'm sorry.
That's true.
There is a perception that they're overpriced and that they try to gouge their customers and do things unfairly. I mean, we've been talking on this show for months now about how they've been doing some things that raised eyebrows and said, oh, that's not really that consumer focus. That's kind of pushing their own agenda for profits that at the expense of what consumers really want. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Amazon can ever have said that about any of their decisions.
No, I think that's you said earlier on, you know, there's exactly the point. There is good customer service. It's all given at a relatively good price. The delivery is phenomenal. I order something yesterday, it comes today. You know, if you've got an issue, the only thing they had a little bit of an issue with was the music store when you wrote and said, I haven't got my thing. It didn't download properly. Really? Because, you know, it was always like you're going to be pulling the wool over our eyes and taking a fast one here. But generally speaking, they've got the business end of things really well tied up. I think the other thing, though, is if you look at the Facebook angle, you look at the amount of data that's being stored in Silk, I can't see that Facebook's storing any less data than Silk is. surely.
Oh no, they are, because this is storing the entire web, unless they absolutely have to, like, unless you're browsing to some obscure archive.org GeoCities, site, they're going to pull from their own local cache and not even go to the internet to retrieve that page.
Yeah, but anyway,
it's completely proxied.
Yeah, hang on a second. If you go through the Facebook environment and navigate anywhere within that Facebook environment, they log everything that goes on there. And to a certain degree, aren't you keeping cookies, etc., in Google Chrome and that kind of stuff? And that's logging wherever it is that you go.
True.
It's not any different than that. But the key factor is what you do with the data. Because if you look at Google, when they look at the data that they get from searches and that kind of stuff, okay, they're not taking your individual IP and your individual name for your application. But Google's got to the point where it can predict outbreaks of influenza by the numbers of people who at specific times type in a search criteria that says flu symptoms. They reckon they can predict the prevalence of STDs within countries for the number of teenagers that type in STD symptoms. Now, that's brilliant. That's great number crunching. But then the nth degree of that, and this is where I think Facebook is going to be going if you're not careful, is that you buy a Nike running application that goes on your phone that gives a geotag and says where you are, and it logs where you ran. And everyone goes, wow, what a great idea. I can log where I run. And then Nike is starting to think, well, hang on, this person needs Nike trainers. So this person then buys Nike trainers through an advertisement within Facebook. Facebook get the kickback, Nike get the trainers. They then know when that person bought those trainers. They know how far they run. They know when the trainers run out. And Facebook can rotate the advert so that Nike ads pop back up when you're due a new pair of trainers.
That sounds useful.
That sounds... that's really insidious. Good.
It's insidious, but it's useful.
But, yes... I mean, that's a phenomenal use of the crunching of the data, but that thing's already happening. That data is there, that prediction. If you look at the Google searches for purchase, they will tell you, first of all, when we're coming out of recessive behaviours within markets.
Yeah, but I think you're conflating the sociological, absolutely, the sociological, financial, the big picture stuff with getting to grips with what the individual's doing. And I think... you're absolutely right. Google, Facebook, whoever, I mean, possibly even Apple, when they were sort of logging the GPS signal and writing that, logging where you were going.
Ping is social engineering for music.
Social engineering. They've done that, but they haven't sort of come out and say, they haven't made it public. Amazon have just come out and said, and you know what? Whenever you type a web address into this new browser, it won't go to the internet. It'll go to our servers and we'll give you it. And you go, sounds scary.
No, what do you guys think? Do you think this is...
Go ahead, Eric.
The reason I think this is really cool, I mean, if you look at the statistics about what they're actually saying and how this differs from even what Opera has done, and like the old, I think AOL did this, Earthlink did this, a couple of ISPs at the end of the dial-up era were doing this a lot, that kind of recompressing of images. I think Verizon is now doing some of that with video according to their terms of service on their wireless customers. But this is really cool because when you put everything through there, they have the ability to pre-cache based on the predicted number of clicks. So like, if you're looking at a certain article on a newspaper site, newyorktimes.com, and you're reading an article, they know statistically from all the other users running Silk who have clicked on that site and used that site on their servers, what next article you're most likely to click on. It preloads that before you even know you want to read it. It's on your tablet locally over the air. So by the time you click on it, it's literally like a PDF, like it's already in the, that's never been done before.
It's cool but scary.
Well, now here's the separation, I think, and this is where the cool but scary bit really kicks in, James, that you mentioned in there. If you said to me, listen, Ewan, I know you're a big runner, so I'm going to track your trainers and I'm going to offer new trainers when we think you need new trainers to look after your feet. Do you want to enlist to this service? There's a million and one runners out there who are going to say, oh, hell yeah. And they're going to buy the application, they're going to buy the trainers, and they're going to buy repeat trainers when they know they're running out because they're serious runners. But what bothers me is when They're gathering my data. They're engineering that data. They're using that data to then start to throw things in my face that I don't want or need, but they know I'll respond to because of my browsing habits, because of my activities, because of my geolocation and all that kind of stuff. You know, if I'm walking past a restaurant and I'm hungry and I say, I'm hungry, what is there? I'm happy with that. I love that service. But when I'm walking past a restaurant and all of a sudden from nowhere, my phone goes up and pings and says, do you realize there's a Papa John's around the corner? No, go away. That's not what I want. When I said yes, tell me, I meant yes, tell me when I asked. Don't just yes, tell me. And the problem that we've got is that a lot of the companies are going to just tell them, just push it in their face, and that's where we're going to get the negative reaction. And I think that the Amazon browser thing,
yep.
If you go on the history of the way you've described it, Eric, as them being a decent company that have good customer services and quality products and care about their customers and care about their staff and care about their shop front, then the information they gather here is going to go for an enhancing experience rather than a pure marketing one that's saying, and do you fancy this? Do you fancy this? Do you fancy this? I mean, if I logged on to Amazon to buy Assassin's Creed Brotherhood today, and at the bottom it said, listen, there's two new books out, and based on your purchase history of the last 2 years, we thought you might want to have a look at these books. And I'm happy with that. Thanks very much. But no, I don't. And if I don't respond to them, they don't show them again. That's good.
Yeah, I'm not worried that they're going to do a whole lot of marketing research with this. I don't think they're going to target us specifically based on our browsing habits. I think they've kind of even said that. But it is a little bit concerning because I think this could catch on. I think this could be game changing if it's as big as they say it is. Because think about it. This must be huge. This must be a huge difference in speed, huge improvement in speed, for especially over 3G. Oddly, there's no 3G version of this yet, but I'm sure there will be soon, and 4G and everything. But there isn't right now. But it's got to make such a big difference that they would risk causing a lot of consumer outcry, a lot of privacy flags, a lot of fear mongers on Wall Street Journal columns and stuff saying, oh, Amazon, you know, look what they're doing now. They're spying on us. They're risking making one of the biggest consumer missteps they've ever made. And I think they wouldn't do that unless the browsing improvement was substantial. And if it's substantial, then I think other ISPs, possibly other tablet makers like Apple or Google or Microsoft may follow suit and do this too. And maybe Facebook. And then when all of our web traffic is funneled through other companies who maybe we don't think so highly of, and that's the new way that the web works in a couple of years, that could be scary.
I was just going to say, this is, I take your point, and that is it's a thin end of a wedge that's made of something quite unpleasant. But what it strikes me as is that, sorry?
It's a poo wedge.
It's a poo wedge. That's the one. It strikes me that Amazon are trying to get into the opposite of social, aren't they? They want to get to you before you ask your friends what do they suggest. It's totally not social.
That's a good point. It's a lot more algorithmic. It's closer to what Google does. It's based on aggregate data.
Yes, and we know that Google aren't particularly good at being social as well, aren't we? So I think that there could be a bit of a battle there, a bit of a sort of a collision where companies are going to have to target their marketing one way or another. Are they going to do it by reputation or are they going to do it by hard sell? And that's going to be an interesting one.
So, I mean, I think here's the question that you've got to ask yourselves is whether the social engineering that's being done on these sites, whether it's Facebook, Amazon or Google, is being done for the purposes of enhancing the experience or whether it's being done to understand the marketplace and leverage the marketplace.
Of course, it's all being done to make money.
I would suggest that Google does an awful lot, which is to enhance. And yes, there's a marketing element that goes along with it, and that's where they make their money. Mm. I would look at Facebook and say they are dressing up social engineering as enhanced, but actually what it is marketing. And I would look at Amazon and I would suggest that it's marketing, blatantly it's marketing, but they want to improve the experience at the same time. And I'm okay with that as long as I've got control over it. No?
Would you buy one of their tablets? Or would you buy a...
My card's sharpened already, dude.
I don't know about it. You see, I quite like the new Kindle. That's pretty.
Actually, this is a good point. You know, Amazon Fire is one element of this that's come out, and the Amazon Silk browser is, and we haven't really talked about the hardware much yet.
I'll tell you what, I'm a bit peed off of the fact that $59 in the US and 89 quid here. That's ridiculous.
I reckon part of that is because the international Kindles, they don't do with special offers. That's one part. And then obviously there's tax season. So there's no special offers discount for non-US Kindles.
Right. Yeah, those special offers give you a discount of... those special offers give you a discount of about 30 to, I think between 30 and $30 to $50, depending on which Kindle hardware you buy.
Sorry, so you were going to say as well?
I was just saying that the cheapest one is an ad-supported device. So that's how they're keeping the price down on the cheapest of the devices. Is it's they've got opportunity there to.
They all do now. This just changed yesterday. Now all the Kindles, I think, except for the older keyboard models, but all the new touch-based ones and the new lowest-end one. So that's I think at least three models, if not five. Are all available by default. Their default pricing now is with offers. They've changed it. So instead of opting into offers to save a discount, you now have to opt into no offers and opt into a higher price is now how they frame it to the consumer. So they're really pushing that.
I think we don't get the one with offers in. I think there's some marketing reason why we don't get it. Or arrangements with the publishers.
I could say it's probably more like to do with regional issues associated with control, you know, kind of like regioning of DVDs is.
So we're paying a greater price for a better standard of service because of less...
We don't get any advertisements.
That's
a better standard of service. But we will still be paying much more than the American one, I think.
Yeah, I just don't know. I don't know if even after the advertising cost is removed, if it's more expensive. But I do want to clarify, you can get any Kindle version you want to. You can pay the additional price never to see any ads, but you pay like about $30 to $50 up front never to see ads over the life of the device.
Right.
Okay.
Can I ask a dumb question about the ones with no keyboard? How do you type stuff in? The ones without touch.
The one without touch and the one without a keyboard, you just don't type anything in.
So how do you search for a book?
You buy it online and push it to the Kindle.
Oh, right. Well, that's a bit...
I think I heard there was an on-screen keyboard, like the kind that you have to select with a cursor, like on a video game.
Oh, really? I thought that was just on the touch, but that would make sense.
Well, no, on the touch, there's a full touchable keyboard, just like keyboard on the tablet.
Yeah. But I didn't know that about the new Kindle Classic, isn't it?
So the question I've got, and I really have got this as an open question, have we got to a situation where Kindle where Anderson has introduced three levels of Kindle, all of which are viable as economic purchases, or have we actually got two that have come out now in the Fire and the Touch, and actually the old Kindle now is on its last legs and it's dwindling out? Are they phasing that out long term, or is this a viable third product?
When you say Kindle... Oh.
Because they still sell the Kindle keyboard, as they call it, and then they also sell this new Kindle where it's got Kindle a new Touch. Industrial design.
Yeah.
And there's the Kindle Touch, and then there's something called the Kindle, which is no keyboard, silver, looks like it's like a hybrid of the two. I've seen a lot of people saying online that they probably just released that one just so it gives you a medium point, because people given an option between three will typically go for the middle of the most expensive, so hence they're trying to push people to the touch. But Amazon now offer Kindle keyboard, the Kindle, the Kindle Touch, the Kindle DX, and the Kindle Fire.
Yeah, the Kindle DX is ridiculously overpriced. It's like you see all the new Kindles that start at like $50 bucks. Kindle DX is like $400. It's like, what the heck? What? where does that come from? It's like you can buy three Fires for that price. Not really, but
what was I going to say? 379.
I didn't hear you, but I was going to jump in and say that, first of all, correct me if I'm wrong, guys. I don't think they changed anything about the hardware of the Kindle with the keyboard. I think it's exactly the same Kindle that was on sale last week.
Yeah.
They just changed the price.
I really don't think though that they intend that to remain on the market after the supplies are gone. I think the only reason it's there, because a lot of people have written about this and discussed it. Why do they think they need a keyboard? That's diluting their product line. No, I think it's very simple. I think it's because none of the others ship until November 21st, so they have to have something on sale.
Yep.
They do. I mean, the new one's available to pre-order now. Just have a look on Amazon itself. And they've got them sat alongside the keyboard-based ones. They call it the touchless.
Yeah. I, you know what's ironically, I think what might come out of this Kindle Fire announcement for me is I might actually buy an e-ink Kindle because that new price, I'm looking, you know, $150, you know, I need to get into reading, and I've been thinking about, you know, the brightness of the screen and stuff maybe hurts my eyes. I don't know. That looks interesting. And I think a lot of people are saying that a lot of people might get into now buying the cheaper Kindles. So let me throw this one at you guys. If we're talking about a war of the screens and the war of the having too many devices and what device do you take with you, laptop, iPad, tablet, phone, all that, What does a person do if he has a Kindle, an iPad? If he has a Kindle and an iPad, does he then need a Fire? Or is there ever a reason for a consumer to carry a Fire and a Kindle, regular Kindle, at the same time?
Probably not, because I think the idea is that one device does it all, doesn't it? It can if you're not sort of wedded into the Apple infrastructure. You can use your Fire as a tablet because it supports Android apps, so you better play Angry Birds and cut the rope and all those kind of things on it, as well as surf the web, and then fire up the Kindle app and read a few pages of your book while you sat on the bus. And sort of, it's one that's everything in it, but you can do that with an iPad as well. So,
I mean, the other question that I've got cheaper. Really as well is thinking about the colour. With the e-ink displays, it was obvious that the book was the book and you turn the page and it had that very usable experience with that. But with the Kindle now, the Fire, are we saying that the black and white text like a book is going to be good enough? And also the thing that bothers me is that 7-inch tablets are accepted as being a good form factor for just general browsing and use and things like that. What's a magazine going to be like on this thing though? Because I mean, I struggle with magazines on the iPad because of the layout and the size of them. At 7 inches, I can't see Vogue or any of those kind of mags kind of working for people.
That's a good point. That's a very good point, actually. It's going to be a different size layout. Magazines are not 16:9. Their aspect ratio is much closer to that of the iPad.
Well, they're right.
I would also say, though, that I think there is a technological advance that we're still waiting for in the flexible paper document that you can have out in front of you without a frame, without being a piece of plastic, an e-ink thing which can be rolled up, basically. And that's not far off. And I think that's probably the future of magazines, where you do have something in front of you that's actually tangible rather than something you need to flick around with.
When you can swat a fly with your tablet.
Yes, that'll be the winner.
Split up, bam!
I know I've played with magazines on my 10-inch Android tablet, and that's hopeless.
Mm.
Utterly hopeless to try and format the thing and zoom in and read.
Because yeah, you're constantly doing that, and yeah, you're shuffling your fingers around on the screen.
Yeah,
I mean, if you get magazines that are laid out for the iPad, they're fairly watchable. But if you get ones like, I mean, the original Wired magazine that came out for the iPad, I found that a real chore to read because it was laid out like it was a magazine. It wasn't laid out like it was a tablet application. And yet, here's the interesting thing: just before they went to magazines on the tablet, they produced that. Did you see the one that came out that was supposed to be a representation of how a magazine could look? And it was more like a little tiny movie experience with scrolling text that you move with your finger and buttons that you press to move stuff in.
Like a giant Flash movie, yeah.
And it works beautifully. But then every magazine just said, okay, I tell you what, fellas, go photocopy this month, turn it into PDFs and just whack it into an application that will go onto the iPad. And you couldn't read it. It was pointless. The only thing that you got any benefit from was the adverts. And hell, there was a lot of those. I mean, you were talking 60% adverts in the Wired magazine, 70% adverts. Huge.
And I bet the adverts were moving as well.
No, hardly any of them were.
All right.
That was the point. It was just like, why bother? There was a few of them that, you know, a couple of them actually thought about it, but most of them was just a case of you know, bung a picture in and that'd be done with it. Go on, Ian.
I'm just saying, with magazines, it seems a real mistrick that most magazines now are generating content for the web in terms of video and other stuff online that with a digital magazine, they now don't integrate that straight into it. So if you're on the iPad and you're clicking your way through the pages of video review of the item you're reviewing, you can click through and you hit the video app and you can watch the video. But there isn't. It does seem, as Ewan says, predominantly they've just photocopied the current app and stuck it into a PDF. And it really is a real shame, because that is one medium I think the tablet's great for. Well, I mean, does anyone subscribe to the newspapers, and how do they compare?
No, I mean, to be fair, though, as well, Ian, I haven't touched a magazine on the tablet because of the wired experience. And there's the real sad part, is that there's possibly a lot of them may have actually really improved the experience and really thought about it and evolved and got to grips with the technology. And they've got fantastic viewing experiences. I won't be buying them, though, because I just looked at it and thought, nah, not bothered. And that was 2 years ago, nearly now.
Mm.
Go on, Eric.
By the way,
Yeah, you were saying something.
Okay. Okay, well, two things. One is I saw a headline just this morning that Rupert Murdoch's The Daily, that iPad-only magazine-style publication, is supposedly only has one quarter of the number of subscribers that it would need to turn a profit. So that's just an update on that. Mm. But I'll bet that as much lip service as Apple, Google, and Amazon pay to magazine publishers, and to a slightly lesser extent newspaper publishers, but magazines are the graphic ones, the layout obsessed ones that are generally the highest priced for readable publication. They pay a lot of lip service to making their tablets the best experience for buying magazines. Oh, they're going to bring back magazines. They're going to rebirth of the magazine and the newspaper and print. I think that, but I bet if you asked any of these guys, you know, you woke them up in the middle of the night and said, hey, do you think magazines are going to be here in another couple of years? They'd say, oh, hell no. I'm sure they don't really believe that, because all these guys, you know, Larry Page, Steve Jobs, Jeff Bezos, they know that that's not going to last. They just want to be able to give them, they want to pay the lip service and let them come in. They want to say, please, magazine publishers, come on and try it, because they want them to fail on their own merits. They don't want them to say, oh, Amazon and Apple and Google, they're keeping us out of the market. They're destroying our business. They will say, no, come in, set your own price, do your own layout. And then they want them to fail because consumers will say, well, the text is too little. What is this? I can't resize it. I can't choose my own font. It's not like an ebook. It's not like a web page. It doesn't have clickable links. I mean, they'll let them fail on their own and let them obsolete themselves.
But I think if you look at newspapers is a good example. If you're talking about the home newspaper reader where, you know, the kid rolls along in a bicycle and throws a paper out onto the lawn, I think that market's dying and dying very rapidly. But what I think's not dying, certainly here in the UK, is the market for papers where people are going to work and they're doing jobs which are essentially very practical, builders, carpenters, blue-collar trades, even white-collar trades when they're going into an office. And I think people are driving, getting petrol in the mornings, getting a sandwich from a supermarket, and they're buying a newspaper as they pass to sit and read it. You know, the passing trade on newspapers is where their future lies.
Interesting.
I don't know that will go that quickly in this country.
Well, interestingly, trade publications are not the ones that have gone to tablet formats. It's the general interest ones, you know, your Time, your Newsweek, Newsweek is gone. Time, Wired, Sports Illustrated, that kind of a thing, the very general broad audience stuff.
Mm. So, I mean, in terms of let's not use the word iPad killer here, but in terms of success or failure of the Kindle Fire, are we saying hit or miss? James?
They've timed it well, I think. Mm. And I think the way that the Kindle's taken off, I've seen, you know, I tend to use the commute as some kind of barometer of the success of a product. And I am seeing as many Android phones as I am iPhones now, but not a huge number of iPads. But loads of Kindles, people are getting their Kindles out because they're portable. I think they're going to do quite well with this because they can sell and sell and sell, regardless of what's happening underneath the surface. So I think it's going to be a success.
Ian?
I agree. I do think it's going to be a hit. It's a great price point for a little device. Again, I'm a little, much the same as James, I'm a little bit worried about what's going on behind the scenes and whether it's an incredible marketing device out there. But overall, with the specs, true Gorilla Glass IPS screen, it's going to be a great little device for a couple of £100.
Mm. Mike? Oh, mate, you're all quiet.
Wobble your cables, mate.
I think it will be, to be honest, simply because it's going to be pride of place on the Amazon homepage, and it's going to be at a price which I'll be able to put slap bang in the middle of it. And people that are interested in a tablet, they're not sure whether they want to get an iPad, will drop the money for that because it's half the price.
Mm. Eric, last word.
It is an iPad killer. It absolutely is. It is the first company and the first tablet who can actually cannibalize Apple's sales, or not cannibalize, but eat into and dig in. It's not cannibalize if it's a third party company, but it's really going to give Apple a hard time. I mean, a tablet for half the price, less than half the price, way less than half the price. That's insane. And it's going to hit that sweet spot where most people use a tablet for. You know, it's 16:9. It's better for watching movies and TV shows than an iPad is in terms of the aspect ratio. It's smaller, so you have it with you in more times. They even try to tell you that it's more durable to put in a purse or something along with keys and other things, according to their images. But that price alone is going to just throw people. I don't know what Apple's going to do to try to come back with that. Meanwhile, Microsoft is off on the opposite end of the spectrum saying, no, tablets aren't consumption devices. They're the office workhorses. That's why Windows is going to be mostly tablet based. So I think Amazon is going to be the most successful here.
I mean, the interesting thing I think with the app stuff as well is that I know I was trying to round up here. I've just thought of another point. They were saying, no, it launches immediately with 10,000 apps. And everyone goes, oh, well, 10,000 apps because Apple's got 100,000 apps. Apple's got 100,000 apps, most of which are utter shite. So Bezos has got the benefit of looking at all of those applications and saying, that's a good app, that's a good app, that's a good app, that's a good app. Come over here. And they probably, you know, they may have iFart on there, I don't know. But there's an opportunity to have 10,000 core applications, which are of a higher standard and more sellable.
One of the great things about the Amazon Android App Store is they give a free app a day, which is a paid app. So every day they will pick a paid app and you can download it for free every day. And it's always a good app as well, or typically a good app.
Yeah. Excellent. Good discussion. Ian, you had a story for us about patents. What was this one?
Oh yeah, I won't belabor too long about it, other than interestingly that Samsung have started paying Microsoft, of all people, for patent fees for, I'm not entirely sure what, because it didn't actually say, but it's to do with the Android operating system.
Right, so Samsung are using Android, which is ruse by Google, and they're giving money direct to Microsoft instead of giving it to Google for Google to give it to Microsoft.
Yeah, or even giving it to Apple, as Apple are after him on the side, which is quite unusual. But yes, I was trying to look through to see if I could find out actually what they're paying for. I can't find actually what particular bit of IP they're paying for, but in the ongoing, it's slightly dull, but also slightly compelling patents nonsense, we find that Samsung is indeed paying Microsoft royalties over Android. Not Microsoft, not Google. Not
and
Apple.
They actually join quite a few companies that are actively paying Microsoft up to like $6 per phone, per device, ooh, rather, to use Android. It's this, when this came out yesterday, it's insane. It's really scary. And by the way, it's exactly the kind of behavior that Google is talking about when they say, don't be evil. That's exactly what they mean. Competing by suing the free competitor out of existence by making it not free. That's so shady. And if you saw the response, they taunted Google on Twitter. The head of Microsoft Communications said, let me summarize Google's extortion comment. Wah, like a little baby crying is what they wrote on Twitter. I mean, this is Microsoft. This is who they are. It's crazy, but they're still like that.
I mean, they're collecting a lot of money from a lot of patents across stuff. I saw that Casio this week are paying Microsoft a patent fee. And it was suggested in the story as well that actually what Casio are paying them for, if it was enforced in a court, Linux would be in real trouble because it would rip the heart out of Linux because it's the same code that Linux should be paying Microsoft for, but they've never collected on it.
Now, I have the actual numbers. Do you know what, guys, know the numbers here?
Go for it.
Yeah,
go for it.
Sorry, the delay here. They want about, first of all, in a lawsuit, they're hoping to get about $8, roughly $7.50 to $8. That's per Android device that they claim is an infringing device, which is all Android devices. In the case of Samsung and HTC and the ones that they have been successful in their cases, they're estimated by analysts to be getting about $3 to $6 per phone. So let's say $6. Meanwhile, the Windows Phone 7 license, again, private, this is estimations from analysts, is roughly about $10 to $15. So $6, $10, that's practically the cost of Windows Phone 7. So that is very dangerous for the Android operating system.
That's a lot of money in proportional terms. Yeah. That's a huge amount of money on raw cost.
Yeah, and the same article pointed out that that's off of like hardware margins of like 10%. I mean, there's so little margin in this hardware, tablet makers have no margin. There's like 3% margin, the article said, on what they can make a profit off of hardware tablets, the OEM tablet manufacturers. So yeah, they're really trying to destroy Android based on cost.
I mean, this might be an interesting discussion if anyone's prepared to have it with me, but I bought Tiger Woods Golf 12 for iPad and for iPhone because I saw a story that said it's being given away free of charge. Oh, wow, I'll buy that. So I bought it in inverted commas. When I got into it, yes, it let me play the game, but it severely throttled my abilities as a golfer. And when I went to pay money on the, here's your winnings, go and buy your extra skills and stuff, it was very quick to tell me that I hadn't got enough to buy it. But for an extra £1.79, I could have $50,000 to spend on my upgrades. And I'm sitting thinking, £1.79, that's quite a price. And
for what?
I got it.
What are you buying? You're buying
$50,000.
Pretend money.
Absolutely nothing.
No, exactly. I mean, it wasn't purchased and logged to an account. It was only on that app. So if the app freezes and crashes and I have to take it off and then reload it, all of that money that I've paid is completely lost and all of my golfers' history is completely gone. But I'm well aware of the fact that I didn't pay any money for the application and it's a very valuable game on its own. And if I've got any patience, I can actually do it. But in terms of making profit, as we've just been talking about there, you know, all these guys are looking for new models to make profit, mm-hmm. and some of them rail against me, but then actually when I sit and think about them logically, well, I didn't pay for this, so, you know, I can't.
So you're suggesting they come out with an Apple app, which is like, raid my patent, and you just like click on these things, and you pay £1.79 every time you click on something.
No, what I'm saying is the way that companies are sourcing profits has had to change.
Oh, absolutely.
It's no longer the same world of, I made a great product, it's over here, come buy it if you want.
And that's because people, yeah,
all
because
about
so
giving
much
it away and then on costs, on sales.
And it's amazing actually to consider if a sign of wealth back in Victorian times was an absolute house full of stuff. But now you can't tell how wealthy somebody is because they are churning their money into things you can't see. They're watching, you know, Netflix subscriptions and MP3s and Zing, you know, and ringing up Big Brother to vote people out and spending money on virtual stuff, virtual property, intellectual property that people end up having a wonderful world in a computer. And you kind of think, well, hang on a minute, where's that money? That money is providing people with food to eat, but actually you're not getting a product from it.
Thank you, H.G. Wells.
By the way, here's another little bit of,
go on,
here's another little bit of info to throw in here. The OEMs, according to paid content, the OEM manufacturers who are currently actively paying Microsoft licenses, royalties to use Android include HTC, Acer, General Dynamics, Itronix, never heard of them, Onkyo, Velocity Micro, ViewSonic, Wistron, never heard of them, Samsung, and Motorola is currently in litigation with them. And here's another interesting data point. Supposedly, this is based off of a Korea Times, I guess a translation, I don't know, this is from GigaOM. Supposedly, an anonymous Samsung official in Korea said, and gave this quote to their paper, Samsung knows it can't rely on Google. We decided to address Android IP issues on our own.
Mm.
Amazon's
going to do.
Well, I'm sorry, just to finish. Just the other day, they said that they were going to back this new Tizen. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. Tizen. That this new Linux-based mobile OS that Samsung is going to be a backer and developer of this new Linux-based mobile operating system. And supposedly, they're upset about Motorola. Oh, sorry, I didn't read that part. It says, if Samsung truly believed that Google's takeover of Motorola Mobility was going to be helpful to the entire Android ecosystem at large, it would have waited until that deal was closed before concluding the license agreement with Microsoft, said the Samsung official. And they know they can't rely on Google, end quote. So that's why they're doing that. They're actively, Samsung says, okay, so now Google's going to try to do their own version of what Amazon's doing or what Apple's doing. They're going to make their own device and tie it more closely to their own ecosystem and protect Motorola and indemnify them against Microsoft. So we're just going to say, forget that. We're just going to build the Windows Phone 7 devices or Linux. That's kind of what it looks like here.
Do you remember the series in the 80s or 70s, Soap?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Confused? You will be. After the next episode of Soap. I mean, I'm as far as the patent disputes go, I am utterly lost with it at the moment.
But the point is, the point is, I don't think you can build an operating system without violating one patent or patent or another. And so you're just going to be walking into firefight after firefight, no matter what you do. Samsung, as you say, is going to be looking into this new Linux-based operating system. But as soon as you start trying to make money out of something, somebody's going to be looking through the source code or whatever to find out what they can claim on. And unless you can completely innovate from scratch, you're going to be screwed. Well, except for the fact that the Linux community, because it's open source and there is no money changing hands on one, you kind of wonder how they can actually make money, how they can claim from that.
Money's not an issue with patents, as far as you can enforce a patent whether anyone's making any money off it or not. A breach of patent is breach of patent. It's like breach of copyright. It doesn't matter if you've lost anything from it. If you breach the copyright, it's still an offence, potentially. The ideology, though, behind all of these things is whether you are... I mean it's poker. It is poker face all the way, because Microsoft ring me up and say, you've infringed my patent. I want you to pay me a license fee. And I look at it, and it's whether I've got the balls to say, no, I haven't, mate. Come and have a go if you think you're hard enough. And what's interesting this week, tying in with the patents discussion, is that Apple registered a patent for multi-touch, were granted the patent for multi-touch, and they've gone back to look for enforcement now from the patent office, and the patent office has said, nah, sorry, bugger off, mate. And that's really interesting, because that you look at the number of devices that have got multi-touch, even Kindle's Fire, it's only a two-point multi-touch, but it's still multi-touch, and Apple cannot do anything to quash that. It'd be interesting as well if some of the patent dispute with Samsung over in Germany is centered around multi-touch, because that's now completely gone, isn't it?
Interestingly, over here, they also this week were denied the trademark on multi-touch, which they had filed on the morning of that they introduced the first iPhone in 2007. And they were denied it, even though they were the ones that really brought that term multi-touch into the basic everyone's vocabulary. Now the lawyers who looked at that, the attorneys said, well, we can't give you this trademark because it's a generic term. It's used by too many people.
Mm. Well, I think there's an interesting number for you before we leave this. Apparently, Goldman Sachs estimates that Microsoft will suck up $444 million in Android royalties over the coming financial year.
What? Yeah, it's actually more. It's a couple of times more, at least, than they make off of Windows Phone 7 royalties. So they make Microsoft makes more money off of people using Android than they do off of Windows Phone 7.
It's madness, isn't it? It's absolute madness.
Interesting point in the chat room from Russ saying you can't build a new operating system without asking half the technical companies that are out there whether you can have their permission first or not. And I think you can. You can build it, because then you're into the poker game, whether they really can come and get you or not, or whether you're just... I mean, I've got this idea that I could make an operating system that would legitimately run Logic application or any of the Apple applications, because as long as the virtual machine will support the application, I can't see how that's a breach of anyone's patent or anyone's copyright.
But you're not going to be able to have a mouse pointer. You're not going to be able to have Windows. You're not going to be able. You're going to have to find a way to do it that doesn't look like anything else.
Definitely.
And look who's talking. What is Microsoft and Apple paying royalties to Xerox?
Yeah.
No, I don't think they are they?
No, never did.
Right. UK2 are our sponsors. Please, please, please support them. They are a fantastic bunch of people. I've had a couple of email exchanges with Craig because there's been a lot of things happen just recently in between the two of us. If you support the Bagel Tech Network, then please support UK2. If you want to buy yourself a domain name or web hosting or e-commerce stuff, co-location services, VPS servers, please go and check out their prices first. Go to our webpage, and when you find our webpage, scroll yourself down and click on the UK2 logo. Once you've clicked on it, that'll take you to their website, and you can have a browse around and buy whatever services you want. When you go to checkout, put in the offer code BAGELTECH, and you'll get 15% off, all one word. Or if you transfer a domain in and you don't want to pay the domain registration service, then you have to type in BAGELDNS, and that'll take your domain management service charge off. As well as, so you can use both codes there. Equally, if you would like to have a go, you can win a Nintendo 3DS. If you go to the logo just below and click on it, they'll take you to a page where all you've got to do is give your name and email address. They've probably got that anyway if you're a customer. And then answer a simple question about the hard disk drive size of the UKV 400. And once you've typed in there that it's 2 terabytes, you can submit your entry. And you're entered into the draw for the BagelTech Nintendo 3DS. 3 prizes there to win. Again, I mean, if you're a customer already, it's not going to matter. They've got your details. But if you support BagelTech, please show them that you're appreciative of their support of the network and go and enter the competition. And hell, you'll probably even win something from it. So please look after UK2.net. We would be utterly and totally lost without them because they pick up every piece of bandwidth that we sap up. And we're doing a lot at the moment, and it's going to get worse, I think, over the coming months. So thank you.
Or better, depending on how you look at it, Ewan.
Worse as in the consumption will get worse. Worse and worse. The effect is good. Also, as well, I forgot to say on our website, we're still up for the European Podcast Awards. I know I haven't talked about it for a couple of weeks. Voting doesn't end until November, so now's the time to really go and start casting votes. Go to our website, and you'll see a big blue box there. Click on each of those logos, and it takes you through to a page where you can vote for us. And all you've got to do is rate us in terms of stars. Click on vote there. And put the stars into the level that you want. Click vote.
All of them.
Yeah, make sure you do all of them. But and you can enter as well there as a competition to win a prize with them too. So what you can do with BagelTech is just win. Well done. Have we got any cool thingies? James, have you got anything with big aerials for us?
I think I've almost got ground clearance to buy my thing with a big aerial, but already I'm already looking towards Christmas at the moment. And basically what I've done is I've just reduced the bandwidth to the modem. Just going, we've got 20K up and down now. We need a new router. No, I'm looking for something for Christmas, and I'm trying to get rid of wires. I do like my wireless. Unfortunately, the wireless Bluetooth speaker I've chosen, which is a Creative D100, only 60 quid, but sounds pretty good, hasn't got any aerials on it. So I'll have to sort of stick a couple of pencils on. But it's the Creative D100. I'll put a link in the chat room. And it's got reasonably good reviews, and it's a reasonably good price. But I think that when you come home from work after your commute, you've had your headphones on, and you want to play the track that's on your iPod, your iPhone, your Android device, all of them have got Bluetooth stereo on them. So to be able to press a button and for it to come play into your on your speakers at home is just so cool.
Mm.
And I think that's the future. Wireless thingy. So it's called a Creative D100, and as soon as I get one, I'll let you know how it goes.
Right. So yet again this week, you've managed to pick something that you've not yet purchased as your cool thing.
Well, I'm not made of money, Ewan. I'm basically using the BagelTech show as a kind of like what they call a financial
Amazon
business
wish
case
list?
For my wife.
An Amazon wish list, yeah.
Exactly.
It's an aspirational cool thingy. But wait, this is the point in the show where Eric always has to ask one British translation. What do you mean when you say aerial?
Antenna.
Got it. I thought so. Just wanted to clarify.
Okay. Glad we educated you, mate. You and me need to do a transatlantic show. Definitely.
Definitely.
BagelTech Trans. Ian, have you got a cool thing for us?
Yes. I've been messing around with the Amazon Fire coming out this week. I've been wondering about my old iPod Touch and whether I could make it into a book reader on the cheap kind of thing in these fiscal financial times. I've been playing around with some of the book reading apps, and I've got to say I can highly recommend a couple. Stanza.
Oh, Stanza's awesome, yeah.
And Goodreader, which opens just about any kind of document format file I've ever seen. I threw a whole load of different things at it. It was really, really, two really good little apps to sort of enable you to turn your iPod Touch, which I don't use as much as I used to, into a handy little book reader. And it's got an advantage over your Kindles and things because it's backlit. So you can read in bed without annoying the wife and have light on.
And it's free.
And it's free, yes.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
No, Stanza is brilliant. Stanza also does, I think, PDF support, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Again, that one will open just about anything. I've downloaded a few of them to see which ones I like the best.
Yeah. Can you do annotations in Stanza too? I've got it in the
edge. I think you can.
Stanza's a really good app. Really.
Yeah, you can annotate in Stanza.
That's brilliant.
You can indeed.
Excellent. Very, very good. Well worth the money.
Oh, yes.
Mike, what you got for us, mate?
I'm going old school today, Ewan, with the first generation iPod Shuffle. I've recently got myself a MacBook Air, and I'm going away this weekend, and I need to put some video onto it. Believe it or not, I don't have a USB to USB cable that I can find anywhere at home. So I've been putting the video from the iMac onto the USB Shuffle, plugging it straight in. Job done. It's one of the only, I think it's the only iPod device where you can plug it in as, and it just recognizes it as a USB mass storage device, like in the Finder. So
I was going to say, so your recommendation is to take something that's outdated and crap and turn it into something that's cool and fun and a thumb drive that it wasn't meant to be.
Exactly. Exactly.
Excellent, mate. We like that.
It's an attractive thumb drive.
Dude, adapt and overcome.
Exactly.
That's exactly what that is. Well done, buddy. I like that. I was I took the easy route. I went down to Best Buy this week and bought a 4 gig storage card instead. But that's just the kind of guy I am. Eric, do I need to ask?
Amazon Kindle Fire.
Oh, dude, yeah.
It's pretty cool.
That's it. You haven't got one of those either, though.
No, I don't.
One day you're going to pick a cool thing and it's going to be valid and right and proper. No,
I've got an Apple water bottle right here. That's kind of cool. No.
Yeah, we went through those last time. That was your penis pump, mate.
Are Amazon Kindles actually flammable?
I don't know. We'll find out. We'll find out whether it blends in a few weeks.
Oh, I was gonna say that. So the big question is, does it blend?
Does it blend? The other thing that got me this week, they're calling it the Kindle Fire, and I was just like, what? Are they taking the piss? You can't be serious that they've come up with Fire's the best name they can come up for it. Mm-hmm. With Kindle-ing. It's asking for bad headlines, isn't it?
It seems like a weird use of the word Kindle. It's like it sounds like a verb phrase, like Kindle that fire, like direct object of the Kindle, of the verb Kindle, but it's not. You wouldn't say that. You wouldn't say, I kindled that fire.
No, kindling.
Have you heard like the slogan that they've got for that? So it's, the slogan is, from Kindle, there's fire. That's the slogan.
Oh, no.
I'd like to introduce you, Eric, to another British word, and that's bollocks.
Yeah, that's familiar with. That one I've heard a few times.
Yeah, you've heard it on this show a few times.
Yeah, exactly. Describes that logo down at the ground.
What I thought was kind of cool today, and I saw your tweet back to Andy Anatko on his review of Kindle Fire, and you put on him, nice to see the use of the English bollocks and half-assed, and I thought, he can't have written that in a national daily newspaper.
And
sure enough, he's written bollocks. I don't think he appreciates that bollocks isn't a cool word. It's not really. Well, actually, we shouldn't be saying it on air and still be using a clean tag. It's that bad, but there we go.
Not bad.
Is bloody still a bad word?
Is what?
Is bloody still a bad word? Couldn't you not say that on TV for a few decades?
Yeah, but I mean, we kind of got rid of that in the 70s. We were all right with that. So
you don't even say it anymore.
Morecambe and Wise said it. Anything that Morecambe and Wise or the two Ronnie said, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
That was the kind of the maxim of British television. They were the acid test. My pick. I'm not a great radio listener, I have to say. I tend to sit and listen to podcasts and audiobooks, and I listen to a lot of the Radio 4 stuff, you know, like the news quiz and that kind of thing, but via podcast, so I can listen to it when I want. But I've got a DAB radio in my car, which I've hardly ever used, and my phone had run out of battery and it was charging, and while it was charging, I put Absolute Radio on the DAB, and I got to say, I've listened to it all the way home from York by choice this evening, and it's great. Great little run of music, great little features on it. DJs are good as well. I listened to the morning show this morning. The guy on that was brilliant. Absolute Radio. I think it's my pick of the week for sure, and you can listen live online as well, so that's where it ties in with the internet digitally thing for the big show. But give it a try if you haven't tried it, because I really, really enjoyed it. It was good.
Was once Virgin.
Did it? Was that Virgin?
It was Virgin. Yes. It was bought out by an Indian bank and is now Absolute Radio. And they are massive. They've grown in their listenership because they're actually playing decent music. They're not playing the same thing time and time again. And I absolutely love Absolute 80s.
Yeah, and before you say it's like Radio 2, it's not. No, it's a broad range of music. It's not all current stuff. It's not all old stuff.
And they do a lot of live stuff as well. They do a lot of festivals.
Lenny Kravitz Live. He's showing a beer in Soho. Yeah. So.
Fantastic.
Sorry, I haven't a clue. Good one, Russ. Yes, that's brilliant. I listen to all of those. They're good. Cool. We'll be back again next week with the big show as normal. Full house planned, I hope. And we'll look at the review of the week's tech news. By that point, Apple will have launched something and we'll be ready to discuss it on the Mac show as well. We're having the Mac show tomorrow at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. Will Green's coming back for that one because he's got a day available, so that'll be really cool. And the usual panel's going to be there as well. And then at 4 o'clock, we've got the photo show with Alex and Chris. And other Chris is coming back, Chris Dick as well. He's coming back to join us, which is really, really cool. So we'll see you tomorrow for those two shows. And until then, have a good weekend, and we'll see you next week. Bye.